brought to you by Penguin.
Bravo 20 by Andy McNab. Read by Paul Thornley. Iraq-Syria border. September 2003. It wasn't much to look at in the dying rays of the sun. A shoulder-high cairn, fashioned out of stones and cement, with a hastily scrawled inscription in Arabic and English. High above the banks of the river Euphrates, a few kilometres from the border with Syria, this was a place I'd thought I would never see again. Luck had brought me here. Luck and an old grey-haired man, who wondered if I'd be interested in seeing a monument built by British soldiers just a few months earlier as they'd swept through the desert during the Second Gulf War, which would become known as the Iraq War. He told me the locals believed it was booby-trapped, that it contained an explosive device that would kill anyone who tried to fuck around with it. My driver and interpreter weren't happy. They urged me not to linger. "It is too dangerous to stay here. The devils are coming." The Saddam loyalists still had eyes everywhere. If you stood still for more than 10 minutes anywhere in this country, the militants would track you down. And anyway, they said, I'd already found what we'd driven out of Baghdad and across the desert for. The intelligence camp where I'd been taken soon after my capture 12 years ago. What did a little heap of stones matter? They had a point. But I'd still needed to see the little heap of stones for myself. It commemorated two of my friends who had died nearby. The locals hadn't yet destroyed it, but they had done their best to scratch out the words. This cairn was built in April 2003 by the men of B Squadron 22 SAS. And as I tried to make out the names of the men who gave their lives on the banks of the Euphrates River, January 1991, I knew it could very easily have been my memorial too. Chapter 1. Within hours of Iraqi troops and armour rolling across the border with Kuwait at 0200 local time on the 2nd of August 1990, the regiment was preparing itself for desert operations. As members of the counter-terrorist team based in Hereford, my gang and I unfortunately were not involved. We watched jealously as the first batch of blokes drew their desert kit and departed. Our 9-month tour of duty was coming to an end, and we were looking forward to a handover. But as the weeks went by, rumours began to circulate of either a postponement or cancellation altogether. I ate my Christmas turkey in a dark mood. I didn't want to miss out. Then, on the 10th of January 1991, half of the squadron was given 3 days' notice of movement to Saudi. To huge sighs of relief, my lot were included. We ran around organising kit, test-firing weapons and screaming into town to buy ourselves new pairs of desert wellies and plenty of Factor 20 for the nose. We were leaving in the early hours of Sunday morning. I had a night on the town with my girlfriend Jilly, but she was too upset to enjoy herself. It was an evening of false niceness, both of us on edge. "Should we go for a walk?" I suggested when we got home, hoping to raise the tone. We did a few laps of the block, and when we got back I turned on the telly. It was Apocalypse Now. We weren't in the mood for talking, so we just sat there and watched. 2 hours of carnage and maiming wasn't the cleverest thing for me to have let Jilly look at. She burst into tears. She was always all right if she wasn't aware of the dramas. She knew very little of what I did, and had never asked questions, because, she told me, she didn't want the answers. "Oh, you're off. When are you coming back?" was the most she would ever ask. But this time it was different. For once, she knew where I was going. As she drove me through the darkness towards camp, I said, "Why don't you get yourself that dog you were on about? It would be company for you."
Sample complete.
Ready to continue?